From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Happy Friday. Welcome to the threshold of the weekend, the Friday edition of Balance of Power. Live from Washington, where the Taoiseach is in town. Everyone's feeling good. The flowers are budding. We have spring in the air. As I told you yesterday, it's like the mid-70s here in the Capitol. We're talking cherry blossoms and dining outside. But as Joe Biden meets today with the Taoiseach, you got that? Everyone got the pronouncer? That's the Irish Prime Minister, makes the annual visit here to the U.S. And as Joe Biden meets with him in the Friends of Ireland luncheon that starts about a half an hour from now at the Capitol, Israel will be in the air. The Taoiseach has been getting an earful in Ireland. 4,000 messages from constituents upset about the U.S. policy towards Israel in Gaza, in many cases urging him to not make the visit this time. And this all comes after an important speech from the floor of the Senate yesterday from Chuck Schumer, of course, the Democratic majority leader in the Senate. Let's listen to what he said.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
A new election. And I can assure you that his counterpart in the Senate does not agree. We heard yesterday as well from Mitch McConnell, of course, the Republican leader who sees this very differently. And, you know, Mitch McConnell has been on the same side of funding for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan as Chuck Schumer. But we're finding a bit of a fissure here. If we can hear from Mitch McConnell, listen to what he said.
It is grotesque and hypocritical for Americans who hyperventilate about foreign interference in our own democracy to call for the removal of a democratically elected leader of Israel. This is unprecedented. We should not treat fellow democracies this way at all.
As we read the headline on the terminal, Israel prepares Rafah assault while reviving ceasefire talks. An important series of developments today that we talk about with Nick Wadhams, who heads our national security coverage here in Washington. It's great to see you, Nick. Important to see this plan come to some fruition because the White House has been very deliberate about no invasion unless there's a way to protect civilians. What do we know about it?
Well, at the moment, not a whole lot. Secretary of State Tony Blinken is in Vienna, and our own Ian Marlowe actually asked him about this issue, and he said no, he has not seen any plan to evacuate civilians from Rafah. So a little unclear what's happening here. Israel's saying it's determined to go ahead, and it will evacuate civilians. But, you know, the pressure from the U.S. is really to do this not in an ad hoc way, not to sort of wing it when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, but a very deliberate and clear plan that gets people out of harm's way, but also provides the necessary support so they can find a place and get enough food and water and shelter to be able to survive. And we're not seeing that so far, according to the Secretary of State.
just because we're seeing this come from the War Cabinet does not mean it's imminent, as you're right. reporting. What's the approval process? What would happen next?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult to tell on the inside of the Netanyahu government. But, you know, what we know is he is under so much pressure, obviously, from his right flank. Mm-hmm. This is really the heart of his coalition. So any concession that he makes towards civilians in Rafah in some ways will almost not necessarily be opposed by his coalition, but there's not going to be a lot of patience if he says, okay, we're ready to do this. And then the U.S. and others are saying, wait a minute, slow down, because they really see this as their window of opportunity to go after Hamas in Rafah. But really, there are very few people who actually have Netanyahu's ear who can slow him down and make sure that that plan meets the specifications that the U.S. wants.
Can you help me frame the significance of what we heard there from Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish-American elected official making a call like that, having supported the policy largely until now? Granted, there have been concerns by Democrats on the Hill, but the Taoiseach's talking to Joe Biden about this. You've got right. Chuck Schumer talking about it from the floor. It's just a very different tenor than we had a couple of weeks ago.
I mean, it's extraordinary. I haven't really seen a lot like it. I mean, but what it does show is that President Biden is under extraordinary pressure now, and in some ways this situation with Israel really has gotten to a place that the U.S. realizes it cannot control, and they're really struggling to figure out how to deal with that. Normally in the past you would have seen a situation where a U.S. president would have said, you know, called a Netanyahu, wherever it might have been, and said, cut it out. You know, this has gone too far. We have civilians dying of hunger in the Gaza Strip. We understand your need to go after Hamas, but you are not doing enough to protect civilians. There is no indication, if the president is making those calls, that Netanyahu is listening. And that's why you've seen the U.S. essentially say, okay, we're going to go around Israel, airdrops of aid, food via ship. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it's almost like the U.S. and Israel allies ostensibly are acting at cross purposes here. So you're starting to really see that bubble up. Should note that the administration said that while Chuck Schumer did give them warning about his speech, they didn't approve it or have any say in it.
He's not speaking for the White House in this case.
Correct.
Nick, it's great to see you. Thank you. Nick Wadhams,
my pleasure.
Of course, back with us. You're familiar with the voice and the face at this point. He runs one of the best national security teams in the business and always rely on Nick's reporting here as we turn our attention to the campaign trail, if I can call it that, by way of Donald Trump's legal issues. Imagine a world, and maybe Dave Ehrenberg has already envisioned this, in which there are no trials before the election. Forget Alvin Bragg. Forget Jack Smith. Forget Fannie Willis. Dave Ehrenberg is, of course, Palm Beach state attorney and has been a voice of reliable analysis and insight here on Bloomberg through the course of this time. And Dave, we see today now that even Alvin Bragg thinks this New York trial, set to begin March 25th, should be delayed because of a massive document dump that happened in the middle of this week. And it's the SDNY's fault, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And you're talking to a state prosecutor and you want me to blame the feds? I will, because that's what we do. So I'm going to take the side of the district attorney here. But also, it's Trump's own fault too, because his lawyers subpoenaed these documents from the feds in mid-January. So yeah, the feds aren't going to turn around overnight and be able to provide 100,000 pages. And so here we are. This reminds me of the situation where you have a child who kills his parents and then ask for mercy from the court because he's an orphan. Well, Trump created this situation, so now he wants the case thrown out or a 90-day delay in the case because of the late discovery. Well, you waited until mid-January to request this. Now, this does not take away the blame from the federal prosecutors in not being more proactive with the local prosecutors in responding to the local DA's request for these documents. So I give part of the blame to the feds. I give part of the blame to the defense. This is what they wanted, a big delay. I don't blame the DA's office for this, but it looks like there will be at least a 30-day delay. And one thing differently, though, Joe, I do think there will be a trial before the election. I think this still goes to trial before the election, but it will be delayed.
Okay, so how will that work? And is it this case? You get, as you mentioned, Alvin Bragg conceding to a 30-day delay. Once we get things back on the calendar, Is it as simple as only waiting for that long? What if they start finding stuff in these 30,000 pages?
Oh, you had to complicate things with that, huh, Joe? Yes, that's the problem.
Well,
if you do find,
okay,
if you find new stuff, that's a problem, and it could be delayed further. But I think a lot of this stuff is just extraneous. I don't think it necessarily will cause any more delays, but perhaps I'm being optimistic as someone who has seen this delay strategy work seemingly everywhere else. But I thought in New York, in a case that's not controlled by the Supreme Court's calendar, that this would go. I still think it goes. I think you'll see a 30-day delay. It is possible, as you correctly say, that it could be extended based on what they find. But there's still enough time to have this case go to trial before the election. This is the case that's most likely to go before the election. And the only other Trump criminal case that I think has a chance of going before the election is the federal case in Washington, D.C. over election interference, the one currently held up by the U.S. Supreme Court.
I'm going to ask you about that in one moment. Remember this conversation and what Dave Ehrenberg said if this thing actually kicks off before the election in New York. Alvin Bragg says these new documents, thousands of them, include materials he requested more than a year ago that the SDNY previously declined to provide, and that some of the documents, he says, about 172 pages of witness statements, Dave, are relevant to the case. How should we interpret that?
Yeah, of the like 100,000 documents, maybe 172 pages are relevant, but it doesn't mean you have to have an additional delay. But if there's something like an important witness that needs to be tracked down and interviewed, that could be an issue, but it doesn't mean it's going to be delayed 6 months. You've got a judge here in Judge Mershon who wants this case to go. And because of that, I think it is going to go. Now, contrast that with Judge Cannon in my neck of the woods, the federal judge down here. She has been slow walking the case, giving all the delays that Trump has pretty much requested. And that case is not going before the election. A lot of it is with the judge. They have a lot of discretion over their calendar. And that's why Judge Chutkan, the federal judge in Washington, D.C., was going to get this thing started until the Supreme Court put the kibosh on it for now.
Mm-hmm. So with regard quickly to that Jack Smith case, we're waiting on the Supreme Court here. Dave, arguments are set for April 25th, about as late as they could schedule them in this term, which would mean, what, a ruling maybe by the end of June? When would you see a trial starting under that scenario?
Well, it is possible that with a ruling in June, as long as the Supreme Court does not remand the case for further findings by the district court, where they say, here's a new rule we're going to set up for all future claims of absolute presidential immunity. You've got to look at these considerations. And then that forces the district court then to have a hearing where they look at all these considerations. And that would essentially kill the case before the election. So absent that, if they just deny the motion, if they just send it back to the district court and allow the case to continue, then it is possible that it happens before the election. That Judge Chutkan wanted 88 more days of preparation for Trump. But I think because of all these new delays, that she will cut that down. And then I think Jack Smith will also cut down his estimated time to try the case. So it is conceivable that you could have this case being tried within 2 months of the election. Now, for those who think there's a DOJ rule in place that says you cannot try a case 60 days before the election, that doesn't apply to a trial where someone has already been indicted. It only applies to initiating new investigations or doing things before a grand jury or doing some investigative steps that could interfere with an election. But the DOJ has already said that there is nothing that bars them from trying this case close to the election.
Spending time with Dave Ehrenberg, Palm Beach County State Attorney. I haven't even mentioned Fannie Willis yet. Dave, this is the story most people will be hearing about, even as you and I look forward to some very important developments here. A judge ruled today, Fulton County DA Fannie Willis can continue overseeing her case against Donald Trump. As long as Nathan Wade, this is the prosecutor with whom she was dating, had a romantic relationship, steps down. Is it the right call?
Yes. I mean, I like the result. I thought that it didn't have to come to this. If they would have just come clean earlier on about the relationship and recuse Nathan Wade because of an appearance of impropriety, you wouldn't have had to go through all this. So I think eventually he reached the right outcome. The only part that I'm a little confused about is how he got there. Essentially, he said the standard is whether there's an actual conflict of interest, correct? And there is no actual conflict of interest. It's not like she has a relationship with the judge or the defense lawyer or a witness. This is a fellow prosecutor. So that burden is not reached. But he also said that he doesn't believe Nathan Wade. He doesn't have credibility. And it's hard to say that he doesn't believe Nathan Wade, but he believes Bonnie Willis. They're sort of on the same team here. And so he found a way to do some legal jujitsu by saying, well, because of an appearance of impropriety, you got to drop either Nathan Wade or yourself. So it's going to be by Felicia to Nathan Wade. But legally, I just thought it's a little bit of a stretch to say we just don't believe Nathan Wade. But at the same time, we're not going to make a determination on the credibility of Fannie Willis. And even if Nathan Wade lied, we're not going to bounce both of them from the case, just one of them from the case. Remember, Fannie Willis adopted Nathan Wade's affidavit. And so I got to believe if you think one of them lied, then you have to say both of them lied. But in this case, the judge is saying this is all about an actual conflict of interest. Since that does not exist, it's game on.
Unbelievable. Dave, great to have you. Thank you for walking us through this, as always. Dave Ehrenberg with us, the Palm Beach County State Attorney with us live from Florida. Hope it was a good cruise.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Welcome to the fastest show in politics, the Friday edition. You're at the threshold of the weekend. And there are no such things as slow news days anymore in Washington. As we gear up for St. Patrick's Day here in the Capitol, the Taoiseach is on Capitol Hill with the President and the Speaker of the House. And we are driving forward here with an eye on Donald Trump's legal journey that may have just gotten a lot easier. A massive dump of documents, thousands of them, evidence that dropped on Wednesday, supplied by the Southern District of New York, late in delivering them, will almost assuredly, just ask the judge himself, or the prosecutor in this case, almost assuredly delay the trial in New York. This is the hush money Stormy Daniels trial. Remember, the one that was supposed to happen before the election. There are big questions now about whether that will be possible. And we're joined to talk about this and a few other important developments by Bloomberg legal reporter Sarah Forden. It's great to see you, Sarah. You're having another busy day here. Even Alvin Bragg says, while the Trump team asked for a 90-day delay, he figures at least a month is due, with thousands of pages to comb through here. How did this happen?
Yeah, this was a stunning development that just happened yesterday. And these are documents that had been collected in the federal case against Michael Cohen. They knew they were out there. They had asked for them repeatedly. And they came in over the transom just at the last minute as Bragg is getting ready to go to trial.
This is a trial that was supposed to start on the 25th of this month, right?
That's correct.
Trump's team says they need 90 days to go through all this. What's going to happen?
So almost certainly the trial will be delayed. And as you pointed out, even Bragg has said we need time to go through these documents and see what's in there. I'm sure they're pouring through them as we speak.
Right.
But there still is the prospect that it could be set again for trial within, you know, a month or two. So we could see this case get back on track. I think the bigger concern is for now how this is going to affect this overall constellation of four criminal cases, including Bragg's. So a delay in the Bragg case could then have a cascading effect and cause further delays in the other three cases, which are already delayed. So it is definitely a sign that Trump's legal strategy to delay is actually taking effect.
What do you make of this? You're an expert in these things. It's such a simple approach that has worked for him over the balance of his life, involved in thousands of cases over the course of his career. Is it as simple as that, that you simply bet on human nature, bet on people to be late, bet on people to not cross their T's and dot their I's?
Well, in this case, the timing becomes especially critical because, as we all well know, we have an election coming up in November, and he's just cinched the Republican nomination, or the delegates to be the presumptive nominee. And so now we're cutting into this kind of race against time. Are any of these cases going to actually produce a verdict before November? And what impact is that going to have either way on voters?
Well, it's feeling a lot less likely at this point. You mentioned or referred to Jack Smith's case here in Washington. We're waiting for a ruling from the Supreme Court on presidential immunity. They've set arguments for April 25th. That means they might not rule on this till the end of June. And that would then set up potentially a trial to start before the election. But then if Bragg is delayed, I think is your point, we have a collision.
We are coming down to the wire also for the Jack Smith case. And that means that it's very, very tight for that case to actually go to trial before the November election.
So we could then be in a world where none of these trials take place before the
election. This is an absolute possibility.
Remarkable. So Donald Trump's legal team, love him or hate him, probably deserve a lot of credit here. We were asking questions about who would work for this man, and they're winning right now.
I mean, this is thrown. All of these cases are now in limbo, and they are not derailed. There's still a chance they can go forward, but there's certainly a much bigger question mark about them than there was just a few weeks ago.
Last one, and I should have probably asked you about this before now. Fani Willis, an important development today. It's a judge's ruling that she will stay on the case in Fulton County on the condition that the prosecutor with whom she was romantically involved stepped down. Did you see this coming?
This is an absolute win for Fani Willis. Yeah. It's given a big shot in the arm to her case, but it doesn't remove all the hurdles. Obviously, there are still clouds over her judgment and the handling of this case. Technically, even if Wade steps down, she has two other very accomplished prosecutors that can carry this case forward. But this is probably the most complex and sprawling of all the cases. There are 15 defendants. Hmm. The judge has said, if and when it goes to trial, he wants to break it up into three different groups. And now we have Trump's lawyer, Steve Sadow, saying if this case has not gone to trial, and if Trump wins the presidency, he's going to move for this case to be postponed until after the following 4 years. So, again, we're seeing the delaying tactics working very effectively in Trump's favor.
Amazing. Sarah Forden, great to see you. Great work. Glad you're with us here in the Bureau on this Friday when the news is breaking. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. This is Balance of Power, live on Bloomberg Radio and TV, as we add the voice of Mick Mulvaney, of course, spent time as Donald Trump's acting chief of staff. He's the co-founder of the Freedom Caucus, former member of Congress, and by the way, former special envoy to Northern Ireland, which is something we were just talking about earlier with Joe Kennedy on this day that Taoiseach is in town. It's great to see you, Mick. Thanks for joining. What do you think about this? Your old boss, you know how it works with Donald Trump's lawyers. Delay, delay, delay. Seems pretty smart right now, doesn't it?
You know, I've heard that a couple times. I've heard, you know, the delay tactics, delay, 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 a couple reactions to that. Again, I try and shoot down the middle when it comes to my former boss. What else would you expect a defendant to do? If somebody comes into you, if you're in a case and someone walks in and goes, oh, by the way, we have a couple thousand documents that we didn't give you on time. What are you going to say? Okay, that's fine. We can start trial tomorrow anyway. You're going to ask for time to look at the documents. The Fannie Willis case down in Atlanta, they didn't ask her to sort of, you know, have that relationship with her prosecutor. They did that to themselves. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, yes, it sounds like Trump team might be delay, 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 but so is the prosecution because they're the ones screwing up here and giving Trump a gift. So I'm not sure Trump is to be blamed for that.
Well, who would have thought SDNY would send a gift with a bow on it like that to Donald Trump? But here we are.
I don't think Mick it's SDNY. Mulvaney, I don't think it's SDNY. I know. Make a difference. This is the state court.
Well, they decided to show up late with the documents. I mean, this could have been handled earlier, as it turns out. But I know your feelings about January 6th. Mick, do you feel like Jack Smith's trial ought to be heard before people vote?
The answer is yes. The reason I'm hesitating is that we have to understand that the right to a speedy trial in this country accrues to the benefit of the accused, not the government. And I understand, you know, folks accusing Trump of delay, probably a smart move. On the flip side of that is the government rushing to some type of prosecution. And are they making mistakes because of it? I think there's a fair conversation to have. Everybody knows who's been sued that justice doesn't work really, really quickly in this country. And there are tools available to you legally, ethically, constitutionally, to slow things down. And that's exactly what Trump is doing. So my takeaway from this, Joe, is that you know, the left is really, really good at hating Donald Trump, but apparently they're not really, really good at prosecuting court cases. So I expect Jack Smith to be a lot better.
That does appear to be the case. And by the way, I'm not making a judgment against delay. Mick, you use whatever tools you have, depending on what side of the case you're on. I completely understand that. I'm just amazed at how effective it has been. My God, we're talking about 91 counts one day, and we could have a world in which there are no trials before the election. There's a lot to talk about here as Donald Trump heads to Ohio this weekend, Mick Mulvaney, and Joe Biden tries to protect his blue wall, as we call it. And you can kind of look at that over the course or track it across the Rust Belt where this election is going to be decided. What's Donald Trump's message in Ohio this weekend?
Oh, I think it's the same as anywhere else. On the economy, are you better off than you were when I was president? That's a fairly easy message to take. On this larger sort of narrative about the weaponization of government, which, you know, sounds really esoteric, he gets it down to a real clear message, which is, can you imagine, can you believe what they're doing to me? Look at me, I'm rich, I'm famous, and I'm white. And they're doing this to me. Imagine what they could do to you if they want to pick on you for a while. Elect me and I'll make sure that doesn't happen. That's a real powerful message. You talk about the blue wall and I get it. And I think, you know, Trump is going to have difficulties in Pennsylvania and Michigan. I don't think there's anybody who's looking around at Ohio as a swing state. Ohio's probably Trump by a good margin. The best evidence of that, Joe, is probably when Joe Biden didn't go to East Palestine for a year. And even with Sherrod Brown on the line. So I think the Republicans are feeling pretty good about Ohio. They're still, you know, got a lot of work to do in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and the like.
It is interesting when you talk about 4 years ago, and, you know, I won't even point you to the job market or the economic data, because I know the inflation remains a big problem compared to where we were 4 years ago. But we were in the throes of a pandemic 4 years ago, and I wonder if the president will try to remind people of that. Mick, there's a lot going on in Washington I need to ask you about here. The Taoiseach is up on the Hill today. You know what that's all about as the former special envoy to Northern Ireland and as a former member of Congress. But it's looking like a week from now, we're not going to be telling jokes on Capitol Hill because the government might be shutting down. Do you think there's a chance we find another stopgap, or can Mike Johnson pull this off when he gets back from West Virginia?
Well, I mean, what would history teach us? History would teach us that the statistical likelihood is that they're going to find a stopgap. Right. I don't think anybody's really hankering for a shutdown. There is a chance you get one by accident. We've had a couple of those in the past. I'll never forget when I was down at OMB and someone walked in and said, Rand Paul just did something on the Senate floor and they can't vote before midnight. So technically we'll have a shutdown for a day or something like that. So that these things happen, these accidental shutdowns. But I don't see the same sort of dynamic you saw in 2019 when folks are saying, let's shut the government down until we get more money for, in that case, the wall. There's a group here who would love to do that on the Hill, but they're very, very small. So I think it's going to be another stopgap. Yeah. I think it'll probably increase spending, as it always does. They'll figure out a way to get around the 1% automatic cuts because Washington never spends less. But my guess is, yeah, they'll either cut a big deal or a small deal, but I don't think they're going to shut down unless it's by accident.
Well, it's this is interesting now that Homeland Security, DHS, appears to be a sticking point here because it involves the border. That's probably not a shocker. And reports would suggest that we basically get a continuing resolution for that one agency. And then the other five bills come together in what we're so cute now in Washington, we're calling a criminibus, CR.
Wow, that's one I haven't heard before. I heard crumbus.
Did you? If this is new to you, then I'm proud of myself. Is this getting a little bit too cute for you, or could something like that pass?
Yeah, but I'm a budget geek. Of course it could pass. The people don't care. Voters don't care. You know, there's a very small percentage of voters on the right wing who care a lot about spending, and most voters really, really don't care, and they don't follow this. I will go to my grave believing that shutdowns don't have any impact whatsoever in politics. People just don't care about them. Can this pass? Sure, it can pass. Just about anything can pass when you're spending money in Washington. Question is, will it on time? I think there's a will to do that, mm-hmm. but the place is so dysfunctional. Again, they may accidentally slip past the deadline, as they almost did last week, and will do again in the future.
Spending time with Mick Mulvaney here on Bloomberg TV and radio. You might have heard about the letter from White House counsel Edward Siskel, wrote a note to Mike Johnson making fun of him in the effort to impeach Joe Biden. "I write to you today," he says in the letter, "because it is clear the House Republican impeachment is over." Is he right?
No. I mean, keep in mind the way the first Trump impeachment worked. The second one was different because that was January 6th. It was very quick. The first Trump impeachment actually started with an impeachment inquiry. The general consensus on the Hill at the time was that there was no basis for an actual impeachment, but Nancy Pelosi needed to sort of salve to give something to her left wing. So she gave an impeachment inquiry. And that's when Trump made the stunning decision to release the transcript of his conversation with Zelensky in Ukraine, which is what then led immediately to the impeachment shortly after that. So I think the Republicans are looking their hands over and say, look, the Trump screwed up and gave him a bunch of evidence that they didn't have, and it turned into impeachment. Maybe the Democrats will make the same type of mistake. I'm not aware of the evidence they say they've collected. They say they've got some good stuff. They have to have a smoking gun to go after the president. They really, really do. But my guess is this impeachment inquiry will go on for as long as it's still politically beneficial to the Republicans.
Amazing. I've only got a minute left, Mick. You heard what the chair of the NRCC is talking about. Richard Hudson says Republicans are not going to lose the House in November. They're actually going to grow the majority. He's pointing to low polling for Joe Biden. He's pointing to redistricting that turned out to, in the speaker's words, be a wash. Do you agree with that?
It's fascinating. I'm skeptical because I understand the general sort of direction that Washington is going. I understand the seats that are at risk and the Biden seats versus, I get all that. But there's some data out there that might support what Richard is saying, what Hudson is saying. The Republicans are up by more than 10 points the last time I checked on a generic ballot. They were up by six in 2010. The folks I've talked to who are not crazy in the Republican conference would tell you, look, Mick, we don't know. We might lose 30 seats. We might win 30 seats. We might tie. We have no idea. It's all over the map right now. And I think that might be right. Hudson's not necessarily wrong.
We'll play this tape back when the time comes. Mick, it's great to see you. Don't be a stranger. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Mick Mulvaney back with us on Bloomberg, former acting chief of staff of the White House, former congressman, co-founder of the Freedom Caucus. We assemble the panel next. Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano are with us. Like every Friday, our closers are coming up as we hit the campaign trail and look at the impact of these legal rulings. This is Bloomberg.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Balance of Power, live from the nation's capital here on Bloomberg TV and radio. It's great to have you. Kaylee Lyons will be back with us on Monday. Will it be a 30-day delay or a 90-day delay? Who cares? Because there will probably be another delay that follows it as we now turn our attention to the Alvin Bragg case, the hush money case in New York against Donald Trump. Guess what? Supposed to start March 25th, as we've told you. Just a couple of days ago, with the trial date looming, a massive pile of documents, thousands of them, drop, forcing, it appears, this case to be delayed. Donald Trump's legal team is asking for 90. That's why I mentioned that. Alvin Bragg himself, the DA, says probably need about 30 to go through this many documents, 172 pages of which he says are relevant to the case. And guess what? All of it, it appears, could have been avoided. Bragg says the new documents include materials he requested more than a year ago. And so if the Trump strategy is delay, 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 maybe we are learning the benefits now of betting on human nature, betting on operator error, betting on mediocrity. As we assemble the panel, Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano, amazing stuff here, Jeannie. As we consider a world in which Donald Trump will face no trials before the election, we don't know that yet, but his legal team's doing pretty well for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in this case, they are absolutely right. They have every right to look through these documents. As you mentioned, Alvin Bragg asked for them more than a year ago. The Trump team ended up issuing a subpoena, I believe it was in January. And of course, again, he is a defendant in a case with every right to go through these. I suspect the judge may split the baby and give him, you know, 60 days, you know, between the 30 and 90. But either way, they have this right. Alvin Bragg has got to be terribly frustrated today that the prosecution at the federal level didn't give these documents earlier. But this is the way these things go. And to your point, the earliest we probably see this happen is late April or early May at this point. And that's probably early.
Donald Trump. Yeah, that is. And it could, of course, impact the only other trial that might take place, it appears, before the November elections. And that's Jack Smith's case here in New York. There must be they must be laughing at Mar-a-Lago. Rick, what do you make of this?
I think they're laughing at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, like, nobody wants to laugh at their own legal jeopardy. But I think this is pretty much what we expected out of Trump. He's just been much more successful than we thought he was going to be. Alvin Bragg announced this case, 34 counts, back in April of last year. It's been almost a year, and we're still finding documents. I mean, this thing is like the gang that can't shoot straight, and Trump has taken advantage of it, and as well he should, right? I mean, he's only doing things that the legal system affords him. But I think, again, right, it's, these cases have become just a huge distraction, right? I mean, they're not politics. They're legal. And if there's going to be a winner or loser in this election— it ought to be done at the ballot box, not in a courtroom.
Well, it's looking like that's the way it's going to go here, Jeannie. If you pay attention to what's happening in Fulton County, by the way, Fannie Willis is staying on the case. A judge ruled earlier today she could have been disqualified here, but it appears that her romantic interest, the prosecutor who brought this to this level, will have to step down. That case may never even happen. And if it does, it might be too late, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I know he is allowing her to stay on. The judge ruled today if the special prosecutor that she appointed steps down or is removed. I believe personally that Fannie Willis herself should recuse herself. You know, if this trial and these charges are as serious as she says they are, and I believe they are, then they, what has happened here has been so distracting and so salacious and such a soap opera, quite frankly. I would have thought she would step down, and I am still hopeful she might. But that being said, the judge has said she can remain on. You know, my view on all of this, I know it is sort of popular to say all of this is a win for Donald Trump. I don't believe that. I think this is a win for the Democrats, and I'll tell you why. I think the thing they must do is beat Donald Trump fairly and squarely at the ballot box. And if I was advising Joe Biden, I would say, go out there and say these trials go forward or not. You don't care. You're going to beat him at the ballot box. And, you know, because we do know that in the art of persuasion, less is more. And there are too many trials out there, and it is hurting the Democrats. They've got to say they can beat him at the ballot box and win people's support and not lose because of these trials.
Rick, it may not end up mattering in the end, but should Fannie Willis still be allowed to run this case?
Yeah, I don't think it matters. That's a judgment that only she can make. Is she, you're really the only one who can do this? Is she a distraction? Certainly the judge didn't like her testimony, commented about how unprofessional it was. This is a mess, right? And I can only imagine the conversations at the hierarchy of the Biden campaign, you know, where they literally every week open up a paper and see some disaster happening along these legal cases. And so nobody's talking about his trip to the, you know, Midwest and talking about investment and the kind of infrastructure building he's doing. talk about, you know, incompetent prosecutors in Georgia. I mean, like, that's not helping Joe Biden a bit. Mm. And I agree with Jeannie. I said, I think this is a distraction to the campaign. I mean, obviously, you have to pull it and you have to pay attention in case something happens. But if everybody had just agreed all these cases can start after the election, Joe Biden would be a lot better off right now. He's been hijacked by this. And every time something happens in a court case, it's like, oh, you know, victory for Donald Trump. Like, he's been indicted over 80 times. That's not a victory.
Fair enough. As we spend time with Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano here on Bloomberg TV and radio, Donald Trump is headed for Ohio this weekend. He's going to be doing the stump speech on Saturday night in what will be an anticlimactic primary contest on Tuesday. But the Senate primary is one that we're looking at very closely. This is Sherrod Brown's seat, of course, a very important one for Democrats as they try to hold on to control in the Senate. And this is looking like a very serious challenge. Bernie Moreno is the Cleveland businessman endorsed by Donald Trump, who's going to be on the Republican primary here. And Jeannie, we're seeing again a Democratic group put hundreds of thousands of dollars into advertising for the Republican in the hopes that it actually helps to create some friction here in the electorate and get the Democrat elected. It's a risky move. It's paid off before. But Duty and Country is the group dropping almost $900,000 on an ad to promote Bernie Moreno, who is running against a more establishment Republican. They want to set this up as a MAGA contest. Is it smart?
Yeah, they're trying to make Moreno, I believe, into Steve Garvey. They did it successfully in California. They are trying again. You know, it is a risky strategy, of course, because there is the possibility that in Ohio, Moreno could win. But this has gotten to be very, very ugly. The latest was this AP report on adult friend finders with Bernie Moreno. I mean, it has gotten really bad. And Democrats, to your point, are doing what they do in a campaign. They are playing politics and betting if they can get Moreno on that ticket, that Sherrod Brown, a must win for Democrats, could beat him. Again, risky, but it may pay off.
Yep. You look, we've seen this before. He's running against a state senator named Matt Dolan and Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. There are questions, as we heard even in the midterms, Rick, about the ethics behind this. Is this good politics when you're trying to prop up somebody from the other party in the hopes of creating an easier competition for yourself?
Yeah, it's always a risk. I mean, if you get what you want and then the Republican wins, you look like you've aided and abetted a Republican campaign. So far, the Democrats have been pretty agile about it. I think they're batting 1,000 or pretty close to it. So I think the risk reward is probably on their end. It's a close race. I mean, every poll I've seen for the last month is Dolan and Moreno, you know, basically 2 points apiece separating each other. So, you know, a little bit of action, like $2.5 million worth of advertising, you know, the primary could pay off. I would say Sherrod Brown in all the matchups against both these guys wins handily right now, and Trump wins handily at the top of the ticket. So it's a state to watch to see, you know, can Trump have coattails? Can he influence the outcome? Yeah. They're only going to get attention on this, the Democrats, because Donald Trump endorsed the guy who's least likely to win against Sherrod Brown. I mean, once again, Trump meddling in Republican primaries to potentially pick the weak candidate. So you can't really blame the Democrats.
Yeah, well, there you go. Jeannie, I've got only 30 seconds. Remember when we used to call Ohio a swing state? What do we call it now?
A not swing state, increasingly red. Donald Trump doing very well there. And, you know, Mitch McConnell warned Trump, candidates matter. And as Rick pointed out, Moreno is, you know, a hard sell in that state, even though it is, to your point, not a swing state anymore.
Great conversation, as always, with our signature panel. They'll be back with us on Balance of Power at 5 o'clock. Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano, Bloomberg Politics contributors, are Friday closers with us throughout the day here. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.